start.
Yes.
Yuvara says that when you start learning, you have to first learn the keys, and then you have to learn the keys. Obviously, without any keys, you can't really learn any. So I have a question about learning and about teaching. The prevalent way of learning is that you start on basic modala, and you do all the Rishon and Acharon. Now, obviously, you haven't seen a lot of the relevant Gemaras that the Rishon and Acharon are quoting, so the sheet is you basically look around. As a Rashba quotes a Gemara, so you just look up at that Gemara. So I wanted to know, in terms of, say, personal learning, whether that is the best shita, or if the person should see first, before opening up the Rishon and Acharon, the relevant Gemaras. And the question is, what are the relevant Gemaras? If you're doing Masechus Gittin, now you can talk about relevance in terms of writing of the Get, Sirus Haget, and Shlichus. So at what point do you say I have to learn the whole Masechta versus I have to kind of limit myself to a certain area? And also this question applies to teaching. If someone is teaching Gemara, how much do you start on just basing it out and just plot right through in terms of the Rishonin? Or how much do you expose your students to first the relevant Gemaras? And obviously part of the question is, how can you keep them interested doing just Gemaras? Obviously they're interested in more of the Rishonin, Machronin kind of shit. So I want to know if Rabbi has any comments on kind of prioritizing these issues.
We wrote together several issues which need to be separated. One question is whether you start on the Beis and not straight, or start wherever you think it's more relevant, more significant. Some skip around. That's one issue. It's another issue is whether wherever you started from, instead of the Beis, the few Beis, the four Beis, wherever you started, depending on which part of the Masechta you want to focus on, how do you structure and organize your learning? What extent do you focus on textual continuity or a thematic structure? Right, the first question. People have different opinions with regard to this. Some people think that there's a certain arrogance to study anywhere but that base. If you decide to start somewhere else because you think that it's more suitable for one reason or another, then you are presenting yourself as being a greater chacham and a better educator or a better talmid of Yonah Habashi, that shouldn't be doing. That's one issue. Now, there's no question, certain masechtas you pay a significant price for that. We're learning Kedushin here, and we're going to get to the issue. In terms of where you'll get and what you know if you learn at the pace that what the Shiva's learn at, which is unfortunately rather slow, but there are no difference between these two Masechtas and that there are so many other Masechtas. Kedushin starts pretty much at the beginning, the foundations. Some are there immediately, etc. Others gradually wind their way in. If you were doing something which is purely systematic and structured, so things Rosenzweig likes to do. You could spend a month or two discussing the general principles before you sink your teeth into a sugya. But even if you don't do that, in certain masechtas, Kedusha is an example, at least the first roughly 10 blot, you're dealing with the foundations. Foundation of Kinyanic issues. That's not foundation of Shlichis, which we'll learn in the second paragraph, or Tzimayim, which we'll learn in the third paragraph. But of that. If you're learning Gittin, it's a totally different ballgame. Unlike Kedusha, which starts at the beginning, which I mean at the conceptual beginning, Gittin starts at the end. You have a Get, which has been written, authorized, signed. It happens to come from Dina Seyom. If it didn't come from Dina Seyom, you'd have no problem. Because Dina Seyom, for one reason or another, you need to certify the Fodor de Farahnachta. Now, the Mishnah takes for granted that you know all about the Get. From where is that clear, but that's taken for granted. In the Gemara, what you get is in terms of the reasons the Rabbi and Rabbi respectively give. So, you have to know about Kiyum Shtaris, where the Gittin come at Kiyum Shtaris. if it's not about Lishma. All of that, as you indicate, you're probably going to get Chagav. Sometimes Chagav is pretty meaty. Concept Lishma, one of the primary Bokeros, and later on, the second, even third Perek. But Tzugush deals with Ksiv Lishma, Ksiv Lishma. That'll give you a good basis. But all is said and done, number one, it's coming in through the back door. Number two, if you look roughly at the whole Perek, told that this law. What there is there, which relates to the Yesedis of Gittin, those early couple of blocks before the Nech, they're relatively more on target in that connection. Much of the rest is issues which are very interesting, very striking, Tzachin and whatnot, but a little way to Gittin. If instead of that, you would start the Futsai, which is where we started the issue. You start with the foundations of Shtaris, the Shvachkira Eidus, the Seder Zaksiva Saget, you'll have some elements of Fayyim Farenachtav as well. You'll certainly have much more involvement with Gittin proper. It seems to be other Masechus in Baba Kama, or Yevamos, for instance. In both cases, the first part, what's the left you say? Eber is Yevamos. What happens is he's learning the first parak, 3.5 plata, and this is the chalitza, 3.5 plata, and with us in Hashem, he's simply the frame and not. And the major part of Yevamos is the second part, the third part, that passes you by completely. So I have no problem with trying to gauge, assuming there's going to be a certain chunk of the Masech they're going to be learning, and if you're not even learning B.U., it's for learning with P.U.s. Then even the whole Masech isn't covered. If you're not sure organized Masech, they should be learning all of it. It occurs to them you're only learning a quarter or a fifth. If you are learning only a quarter or a fifth B.U., I think considerable care needs to go to the question of what you select. For reasons which we can only conjecture, Chazal started certain sugyas, not only at the back door of the case of Gittin, but with the deviant case. Yevamos doesn't start with Yibam and Chalitza. It starts with cases in which you don't have Yibam and Chalitza. Zvachim and Achis, don't begin with how you should be back in the home, what you should have in mind, etc., or the techniques. Begin with the deviant case. From the Chashav Shalei Lishma, what happens? Now, as it happens in the course of explaining that sugyas in the beginning, first part is Vachim, do explain what are the different avedas, how do you know you need Lishma? So, it's a matter of fact, the initial mission starts on an offbeat, but you get into these sayings. That doesn't happen over. I say again, this is an ideological issue. Avraham Shapira thought that he in China would not start anywhere but the base of an olive. Yeshiva, this is there, most of them much more flexible. And I say again, the consideration being you have to give thought to where the greatest effect of efficiency will be in terms of getting some mastery of the field. That's one issue. Which part of the Masech did you learn? Now that issue may have to do with what would give you greatest knowledge of these sages that have to give Masech. There may be other considerations. So I might decide, learning Gittin, that he wants to learn the 7th parak, the 8th parak, to deal with Tzroim, to deal with Kinyanim. Even though maybe if you know what a Gittin is all about, that's more marginal. But they're dealing with general principles. You spent shlichus before, etc. That's one kind of issue. That has to do with structuring your years learning, 1 year or many years. And many of those decisions an earlier level, a younger level, we're not maybe the Talmud, many case studies maybe a particular Rebbe, maybe Rebbe's one of the yeshiva who he's in charge of, who's in charge. The other issue has to do with how you tackle a particular sugya, a particular Rebbe. There's no question but that general knowledge at the level of pekiyas of the material is enormously helpful and some extent time saving when you once get around to the eve. And you're right, Chazal envisioned, not just some people do today, some people today, particularly Magid Shir, if they know that in the winter's month they're going to be learning Gitin, and the previous year they were learning Shabbos, will spend much of the summer working up, at least Pekiyus wise. Winter, the next winter's Masechta for themselves. Of course, the older and more experienced they are, they need that less. Chazal envisioned the total program. 5 years Pekiyus before you move on to Gemara. To move on to Eve, which is essentially Gemara. There are some who advocate that the Maal was very keen on maintaining that some Midah. And there are Chadorim in Yerushalayim which do that. By and large, in the Ashkenazi world, it's been 1,000 years since that was done on a regular basis. And it's probably much more so. And part of it has to do, I don't know, I can only guess the reasons, part of it has to do the point that you mentioned, maintain the interest of the Talmud. You need a particular kind of Talmud who's very tuned to routine, to discipline. I would sit around till he's 15 years old before he begins to hear a smell, which is what the Mishnah Sanhedrin in fact prescribes. I think there is value in trying to see to it at least a level of an overview, some of the basic concepts we presented to Tabidim early on. I very much recommend people learn that none of it is necessary, but learn all the Mishnayos, at least which is relevant to that part, which should be learned. But become if you're learning where the first half of the Sikh is one chunk, basically. So learning all of those Mishnayos, and it's very important. Second of them, Sikh, is less relevant than the first. If you know the Mishnayos and Merubah, it won't hurt you that much in Luyam Miniyach. There's also much value in trying to work up some Yesedis. Yesedis can be important for one or two reasons. Here we had some introductory shulim, which dealt with Mishnayos and Mitzvah, Isurim, related issues, etc. I thought those were valuable and important. I don't think they were critical towards understanding sugis and learning subsequently. Even there, but only marginally. The other day, while learning Gitin, Haaretzion, there we start with shtaris, that's an introductory shulim by shtaris. I know what shtaris are all about. That comes up time and again. It's significant for understanding what you learn subsequently. First time I learned Gitin by the Rav, he started with the Sugya of Pelei Miksavim, Shtaris, continued with the Sugya of Emelimu, of Samach Rav, and only then began to learn what I was doing in the Masech. But there's no question do more of that would be valuable. Problem is that so many people in our community have lost childhoods. They should have been doing when they were 12 and 14 or 15, working on basic knowledge, having the first round of mastery, at least from the area, with the basic of Sikhtis. But it isn't done. They learn very little. and they know very little. Consequently, you have to give them, instead of food, very often vitamin pills, capsules which encapsulate learning. Some of them can be got today. There are all kinds of reference tools. But a person once needed to spend a year learning a Masechta, if he spent 2 weeks reading a Masechta Talmudit, be plugged into the right computer program, probably get the orientation. I imagine that that's what some people are doing. But there's no substitute for that kiss of the youngs.
In terms of prioritizing one's learning, it seems like the Rambam's formulation that the Dalai Lama of halacha in the world is what we base ourselves on, and dedicate most of our time to halacha. In addition to that, there are many other areas of Torah. There is Mishkafa, Agada, and even specifically in the world of Mada. So how does one negotiate? Meaning, should one have a certain backing or expertise, I guess, of halacha before he moves on to these other areas? And specifically Mada, I'm curious about.
I don't know which Rambam you're quoting. He said... If you begin to read what the Darshan Halacha represents, it includes a great deal which for us would cover the Machshava and Hashkafa and philosophy and so on. It takes Halacha as referring to the Darshan of Torah, but the Halacha in the narrow sense. A little single answer to what you're talking to, the question which you raised. A little single answer to the earlier question. Broadly speaking, it's important for people to have some area of knowledge of Mashkofer and Makshofer. Not necessarily in terms of history and philosophy, but to have some sensitivity to certain spiritual issues. And these, in a sense, are halachas too. No, Rabbi Avudas Chodenvachu used to talk about the Chosdeus, the Chosdeus Taylor, so having different characters in some respect, at least be treated differently, Chosdeus and Matzah. And he devoted what he left for the world, was primarily in these areas of Achshav. In terms of developing the tools and the capacity to deal at a higher level of Achshav, probably easier to do that in the world of halacha, which is more technical or formal, than the world of achshava. A reasonably bright 14-year-old boy can understand svaris in the world of halacha, can deal with svaris, can be activated and energized, to think in terms of svaris. Can't do that with higher levels. The word Machshav. You understand the Reb Chaim in the word Machshav. You can understand the Purim of the Reb Chaim in the word Machshav. Ultimately, I don't think we want to begin grading what's more important or less important. A very grounded, very rooted in the word of Allah has been the fundamental, primary exposure to Torah. At the same time, I think we're all in agreement that if we needed to choose between someone who's lacking the fish in the Yerushalayim but is very sharp in learning, in the reverse, we obviously prefer someone who's deeply rooted in the Yerushalayim, even if he's very limited in terms of learning. But this is partly a question of, when speaking of prioritization, it's partly a question of sequence, which point, partly a question of how much. In terms of sequence, I think that to deal with texts of Machshava, which I don't mean, basic texts of Chumash and Siddur, those ones exposed early, the without sensitivity of what later comes to Caesar for some ramifications. But the earlier exposure, I think, should be primarily the word of Halachim. Here's a Makshava, I think, going to be said to us later on. I don't think that one can or should define categorically proportions. I think one could say that historically the pillars of the world of Achshava were generally B'dei Halacha. Some we don't know how much of Amnon B'dei Halacha was at the age. But otherwise, dominant figures, at least those that read the Mesmedesh, what was on the university is another story. But those internalized the Mesmedesh, taken hold, taken root in the Mesmedesh, by and large, they like to. That doesn't mean that there's no room for people who are Dele Machshav. I would not try to say external routes and why not routes. The end result has to be primarily the internalization of Torah values and Torah sensibility. Whether that is best achieved by overwhelming obstacle or by the bite of it, or whether but you need an addition to other elements. You know, this is, I don't know if you've read the Dev Katz's book, he has three volumes of Vlad Musav, and he published a fourth volume of the Purus, about the Vlad Musav, who has written from his vantage point, he's an out and out advocate of Musav. But there, you get a quick summary, including some reference back to the Shunyim, with regard to where, what the feelings were about one as opposed to the other. Bear in mind, when the Muslim was introduced in the yeshivas, what you were talking about was take time off, regular learning, 15 minutes, half an hour. That raised quite a furor, the Rosh Nevanir. On the other hand, the kinds of government of others speaks almost with ridicule of people who spent 30 years learning Gittin and don't know much about Bach Shomer. So the prime set was not the Kursus. But I think the world has an attentive ear to that, at least at some level. I think the primary initial exposure is to be primarily to the word of Halacha, together with, he was mentioned, Agoda, you know, Agoda Machshava, not coincident, not synonymous. But the systematic learning of Machshava would wait. Unless you're dealing with, you know, high school students who can't wait, they want answers today. That's a different ballgame. You have to ask yourself to what end you want people to be exposed to the areas you're talking about, in order to maintain and to the commitment, or in order to make them more sophisticated religiously. Those are very different aims. If you need it in order to sensitize people to the world of Avodas Hashem, that's a very high level degree of priority. It's a question, maybe the philosophers. Good point.
Where would Rebbe put in like other philosophies or history into this picture?
I don't know how much we're talking about. You know, obviously they should know some history. The history of the world of Halacha, the Sderat Gur has developed, the history of Klal Yisrael. But you have to weigh how much time is used at your disposal, whether it's a Talmud or a Mechanech. I say again, you can't think about the means independently of the end. What kind of population you're dealing with, and to what end wanted to know history. I think history is important and significant. But for some people, it's exposure to knowledge, information. To others, it's a lifeline. How about Budapest? That's different for them.
A lot of discussion lately in the Torah world about the issue of the age of the universe and the seeming conflict between Torah and science in this issue. So, I'm wondering if Rabbi could tell us what he believes, which approaches he believes to be acceptable in response to this issue, and which he believes to be unacceptable, and also if he knows of the views of any of his Rebbeim on this issue, which how they help.
There's a tradition of Jew which you know. There's no question that some share it here too, very, very literally. The Ramban apparently knew that some people think otherwise. He made a point of saying, and don't imagine that the days that are mentioned in Bereishis is anything but 24-hour days. The Ramban, on the other hand, Ben Nevuchim, does speak in terms of stages. A day for him is not, it's a time period, it's a stage. It could take longer to get. More time, less time. Whether one is going to identify with one view or the other, I guess there's certain elements which speak to one's sensibility and where one stands without some of the issues concerning possible confrontations between more or less accepted dogma and scientific theory. This fellow, not Rabbi Yezer, he's a physicist, he teaches very taught, and he still teaches in Babylon, he's a Petach Tikva. He wrote a book, I forget the exact title. What is it? What's that title? Yeah, that's the Hebrew version and the English version.
In the beginning,
right, that's it. He went out of his way to harmonize scientific theory with the Parshas and Bereishis. I don't remember the details. He asked me to write a preface, which I did. This is going back 20, 25, 30 years ago, a long time ago. When the book appeared, began by saying that certain areas there's a conflict between religious values, religious conceptions, and scientific conceptions at a fundamental level. That's one kind of conflict. Whether you speak of a man spiritual terms or purely in physical deterministic terms, there's a conflict in terms of what's the fundamental perception of man, man is Solomon Akin, and man in general. There are other elements of conflict which is not so much inherent in terms of the substantive content. The universe is X old, Y is old. It's not in our situation, until about the 19th century, it's not in our situation fundamentally an issue which brings the different variables in the clash. The clash is in terms of textual authority. Here you have one source says this, that source says that. To the extent that these conflict, so if you opt for one or the other, you are prioritizing. If one finds a way, in some ways are legitimate, maybe some ways are not, to reconcile the text, reconcile the source of authority, then the issue itself is not a critical one. I said with regard to what he's written over there. I didn't take a position with regard to one way or the other. But I think that is very much the critical issue. And to what extent one can do that, of course, is a problem. The whole issue of allegorization, which arose partly with regard to the Rambam, he pushed very hard for this, and partly subsequently, this is a problem. The Rambam took whole episodes in the Chumash and allegorized them. Malachi never came to Avraham, Yaakov never confronted the son of Shalesov, all the dream, all the vision. Chazal to some extent did that with regard to Yiv. The Goy says, same with regard to Yoina, I am really well, Marshall I am. If one goes to have over the Buddha Marshall I am, allegorization, certain areas can write a fall. Platonic tradition, which corresponds with the general Platonic tradition in Western philosophy, it's very much engaged in allegorization. And in the 12th or 13th century, part of what the Rashba was reacting against in Kelly's Natus with the Vuchim, there were people who said that they were never obeys, Marshal Ayu, they were never Shvati, Marshal Ayu, etc., etc. Totally undermining the very foundations on which we rest emotionally and factually. And how far one can go with that, I don't have a clear idea. Obviously, it's a big difference to say Avraham never existed and say this incident was like never took place. But all kinds of intermediate possibilities. There are inter alia ways of striving reconciliation. Rambam was very keen on reconciliation, and he did not confront so much scientific or historical issues as the modern world does. That was not so much the problem in medieval times. Medieval times, the problem was more philosophic speculation. What if philosophic speculation he went for and was willing to go for? Rambam says, he says in the book, that if he has a very lengthy section on the creationist view of the world as opposed to the eternity of the world in Aristotle, at the end of that he says, don't think that I took this position only because of the Parshas and Bereishis. If I were convinced on philosophic grounds that Aristotle was right, I would have found a way to deal with the Parshas I did with regard to anthropomorphism. But, of course, where he thought it was a Sofka Shokul or close to Sofka Shokul, so then I'm not sure the authority of the Suki waited. But the Rabbi writes over there with regard to philosophic issues which confronted him. I imagine much of the same can be said in thought with regard to issues such as that which you mentioned. It's not out of the ballpark. Just last night I heard a lecture for Savlin, dealt with a whole range of things of external censorship, internal censorship. And he quoted, I don't have the knowledge, but he quoted about this very issue. A little book which apparently was censored and taken off the market, which was written some views of Gedalia Nadal, who was very close to the Chazon Ish, and a very pivotal figure in Bnei Brak. Apparently there, this is before the Sniskan thing, of course, they took the position that indeed the findings of carbon, etc., the findings which scientists tend to base themselves upon are legitimate findings and would have to be thrown off by that, etc. But then he also mentioned, I saw the page printed in a black part of the page of Slipskin about this, that no one should, they didn't mention by name, but they said that there are people who are publishing material which they presume to be done without an adult, so you should know that you can't rely upon any of the materials they publish, only that which is written by his children and his own Talmidim, only that is reliable. But apparently, he thought that was I think one has to differentiate, as I've said before, between very substantive issues and issues which happen to entertain a clash with the sources. If then one can mediate the conflict, so to speak, by reinterpretation, which should be sometimes be reinterpretation of the scientific elements, then you avoid that. Yes.
Over the past few weeks, when you've heard pronouncements by Gedolei HaTorah, Gedolei HaHalacha, in terms of giving reasons for natural events, saying that Hurricane Katrina was because of the United States opposed, supported it. Taking it for granted that we obviously do not accept such pronouncements, how does that affect our outlook towards these Gedolei HaTorah, Gedolei HaHalacha's pronouncements in terms of halacha? Can we separate the hashkafa from the halacha?
This is a sad parasha, and I think that we want to continue to maintain respect and deference to the authority of certain Gedolei HaPoskim. On the other hand, there's real pain and anguish when you hear some of the things they've said in this connection. And the pain and the anguish is not just because these will not sit well on Broadway. The pain and the anguish is because religiously it is offensive. It's presumptuous, and part of it's ridiculous. It's insensitive. It's totally irrational. So it is no question to be painful. You ask me would I stop relying on the psyche of some of these people? I don't think that I would. Has my respect for them declined? It has. But I would differentiate between what I would regard as moral corruption. Someone is not doing the Malach Shem Tzvokos in that respect. Between that and what I would regard as being error, maybe folly, again, presumptuousness, but certainly well short of Rabbi's corruption. I think we would like to think that people to whom we turn, upon whom we rely for guidance in the world of Halacha, are people to whom we can look up to, whom we can admire in their totality. And when certain things are said which you can't identify, you can't admire, it's a blemish. You can't tell that it's not. Things that I've heard, I would want to jump ship just for that.
Just to clarify, what makes them religiously invalid specifically?
that makes these statements, from my point of view, inappropriate. I think it's very, very humanly insensitive. And it's preposterous historically. We still live and should live in the shadow of the Shoah. According to these theories, the only people who should have perished in the Shoah should have been people that don't learn, that the blacks don't learn in New Orleans. Is that what happened? I take my cue from Kabbalah Sanhedrin, which I think should be engraved upon our souls and our minds. There was a person who thought of himself as knowing the mind of Ben Shalem. Yadei Das Elyon. Bila. Chazal say, Hashta Das Behemta Laviyoda, Das Elyon Laviyoda. How's one have that kind of partly insensitivity to human suffering? And what kind of conception do they have of reward and punishment? The blacks in New Orleans deserve to perish because they haven't learned? Are they obligated to learn? If they're obligated to learn, is that what happens to people who don't learn? Is that the favor they deserve? Is that the favor they really get? It's presumptuousness to be a dead Asselian is religiously offensive.
According to the road, then you can never really make any statements about Kabbalah of Hashem. You find Chazal, that's if you're affirming all the time saying this.
Chazal, these people are only these people.
And what about the Rishon Macharon? Rishon Macharon also find Chassid Yavin's same statement why the Girsh Sfar happened. I mean, there are many, many Makoros in Rishon Macharon trying to explain what was the divine plan.
Some of these statements are made for moralizing purposes. To inspire people, tell them, look what happens if you don't learn. That's very different from some sense you made recently. And I say again, after the Shoah, these things need to be examined somewhat differently. You have, of course, we live in a conviction there's some cause and relation between how we conduct ourselves and how the relation with Hashem relates to us. I say it every day in Kishma. But if you have in Tanakh, if you have in Chazal, that it's coming out of a world in which spiritual vision, spiritual perception is a different order. We are, in this respect, indeed, Hashem Kibalachim, etc. We have no right to make these statements. Hashem doesn't desire to make these statements. We should be humbled by these terrible calamities. And acknowledge that they defy our understanding. Rather than pretend that we know, but we don't know, we cannot know.
Should they lead us to tshuva? I mean, if we don't really know why they're happening, so why should the Nekor, why should the Katsuvah be tshuva? Because they could be happening for all kinds of different reasons.
There are all kinds of avenues to tshuva. One doesn't need to make preposterous statements in order to encourage people. But we have a history of these things. There was a train accident. The bus was driven to my train. Kids from school, I think it was, junction called up on him. 22 kids in were killed. Certain Rav, whose name I don't want to mention, time said, you know why it happened? Because they didn't check the mezuzah in the Betel Tikva. You have to ask yourself, first of all, why should young boys be killed because their parents haven't checked mezuzahs? You have to, there are certain theological assumptions about Schar V'Einish which you have to assume in order to make these statements. Comes to the question which I mentioned before, that blacks should be killed because they're not learning Torah. I grant you alternative explanations why the blacks are killed are equally problematic. But we don't offer those explanations. It's much better to remain with the problem to present fallacious and offensive interpretations. As for tshuva, we'll find other avenues. But every avir is chesol and emuna.
Well,
I don't know quite how you define emuna. That every avir can be conceived as being more than itself. That thing is certainly correct. I spoke it the other night, I mentioned it. Milton has a chapter in his Christian doctrine which he ticks off within his context 20 different, speaking of original sin, 20 different categories of sinfulness which accompany every sinful act. I don't remember what they were, but the basic notion, I think, is a very correct one. But I don't think the problem is so much emuna. To assume that it's a problem, lack of emuna, well, maybe at one level, I think to assume, I'll mention in a minute what I have in mind. To assume that's probably Munda is to take a very rationalistic view of human behavior. To assume pretty much the Cartesian view, which has a different orientation but somewhat similar to Plato, that sin is basically error. That is a very superficial, rationalistic view. All kinds of sin, which are the result of passion, of carelessness. Now, if you ask me what by emunah you mean, awareness of the existence of Ben Shleilo and of his presence, well, I would say yes, to some extent, of Sodan Emunah. But then you talk about Emunah not in terms of a kind of catechism or dogmatic assumptions, assertions. You talk about Emunah in terms of felt presence. The Mishnah says, "Mistav Shesh Lot Bori De Avero, Dav Shemar Nechayin Roi, Yen Shemar, Shemar, Shemar." Yes, what it said was, if you knew, if you really felt that you ought to feel the presence of this room, it wouldn't occur to you to do any kind of, you wouldn't talk a show, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it in front of your rabbeim, you wouldn't do it in front of your parents. How do you do it in front of the Ben Shalom? No. To that extent, Dabalabayim, insufficiently perceived, people do an avail. That's certainly true. But doesn't mean that because people are weak and are unable to withstand a certain amount of temptation, and therefore engage in some sinful act, that basically their emunah is flawed in terms of substance. I don't think so. It's qualitatively not as powerful as it should be, as is the case with just about anybody. But I would not, I would not think it's purely rationalistic terms. People have great ma'aminim and nevertheless have lapses of one kind or another. And great people could have a different kind of yetzer, but a yetzer passionate in nature. And we don't want to underestimate the power of passion, of sensibility, whether in Freudian terms of the unconscious, the subconscious, or non-Freudian terms. But sense of man or woman as being simply a thinking machine, that went by the boards a while ago. Yes?
So we're in different places, private conversations and the love for self that you had, that you conveyed a sense that you didn't give over the spirituality to Stamina. I was wondering if the Rosh Hashiva agreed with the Rav's self-criticism and how the Rosh Hashiva tries to transmit a sense of spirituality to Stamina.
You asked me a question about the Chavik question of Talmidim. I think by and large his perception was correct. That's part of what the perception of spirituality is. I think as he conceived spirituality, by and large, there's a lot of truth to that. His religious experience was in its entirety more balanced than that of many of his Talmidim. There was emotional components, experiential elements, and while every Sefer Shulchan was near and dear to him, but I think it was not as exclusively mechanical and formal as this for some of his Talmidim. That was pretty much what he felt. He felt many of them were dry. I quoted the story when I was, it was Maspid. He used to show in Boston, and once again, the shul was best Talmidim. Three hours shul, 4 hours shul. After the his wife was Nifta. And when they said to me, he was saying, sure, but Nello was coming on. And so they're dry. I have to wake them up. So he decided, along with the sure that he was saying, was a start of liquidity. He started with the Parashat Rei, Lanim Day to Li. The Rebbe heard about it. Remember that day or the next day, someone came to the house and brought a fresh set of liquid tefillin. So I heard that I was learning. So he learned it for a while, and he said to me subsequently, it didn't help. The Lord was a very complicated person, very complex, very multifaceted. And many people took from him that part which appealed to them, which in itself is a problem if you deal with a person. What's worse, in defining and describing him, you very often confine him from the right to the left, only that as if the totality of his religious being personality was all, only that part which appeals to them. He wanted to give over much more than I think he succeeded giving over. Whatever the reasons were, some had to do with him, some had to do with the Talmidim, some had to do with the climate of the times. But the problem is that spirituality is very difficult to convey. It's difficult enough to experience and to attain. To convey is much more difficult. It's much easier to say shulam and tzeis than tzeis and shibur d'raisim. You're dealing with a tradition which is systematic, which has legal categories. Spirituality is much more supple, and it's much more difficult to transfer. Know that love didn't have the external trappings that some people, some yeshivas, you could see it on their face and they communicated. Love didn't, so much was the internal, came out of his writings. It's been more difficult. If you ask me, I have time. All right, I think we'll...